I just realized I had the show on mute. That's kind of a bummer. All right, folks, welcome to another edition of Liberty Unbridled. I'm your host, Ken Mulman. This is the My View Matters Radio Network. The blog talk controls defeated me today again. I apologize. Anyway, we are here. We are live. If you want to call in tonight, the number here is area code 858-683-1326. Again, 858-683-1326. We do remember have the new format where just kind of go over the stories and whatnot of the day for the first half hour, and then after the bottom of the hour, we take your calls and comments. So you can call in early if you want, and again, that number is 858-683-1326, and hang on. And if you do want to come on about any issue, be sure to hit that one key, press one when they prompt you to do so, so we know that you're in the queue and want to talk. I am here again tonight, joined with co-host Dave. Dave is here tonight. And, in fact, Dave will be hosting the show next week. I am unavailable, and so Dave will be here by himself, so you all treat him nice, and that'll be his first time solo on the show, so that'll be new to the show as well. Let me figure out what I've done with all of my stories. Here we go. All right, starting off tonight, as always, the randomly generated political rhetoric from the political rhetoric generator. Tonight's randomly generated political rhetoric is negative and, you know, negative campaigning. So this is our negative political rhetoric for tonight. My opponent is conspiring with unstable nuclear regimes, Chilean miners, and Rupert Murdoch yes men. I love their generator. Sometimes this thing will generate like real stuff sometimes, and sometimes it just sometimes it generates things that are so bad I won't even say them. Otherwise, always a good time on that. So we had a handful of interesting things kind of come about here. You know, we're into the primary season, and things are moving along here, and I find it very, very interesting kind of to watch everything going, and I seem to have somehow misplaced the survey. I had a survey here that Matt Bevin is catching Mitch McConnell in the Republican primary. Now, Bevin is still pretty far behind. It's 51% for McConnell, 34% for Bevin, but that represents a move forward for Bevin, and actually probably more importantly, it represents a move back for McConnell. McConnell had started out at 55% in the race, and to be losing ground back towards 50 is actually kind of dangerous for McConnell. So just kind of interesting to watch that kind of go. Not that I have any vested interest in it, not that I can even vote in that race, but it's probably the most interesting race statewide or around the state, other than possibly another race that got some press this week, was the Shelley May versus Phil Moffitt race down in Louisville for the State House. And there was a story contrasting who had donated to who, and it was pretty interesting to see. Shelley May is the former Republican Party chairwoman for Louisville, and, of course, Phil Moffitt is the former 2011 gubernatorial candidate who did not make it through the primary, but is an all-around good guy. I know him personally. I like Phil a whole lot. Anyhow, that's you know, a couple of races to watch. I think they're very interesting. Other than that, the only real political news per se was the announcement. And I was pretty surprised at this, that Crit Llewellyn has announced that she will not seek the governorship in 2015. And I think that's interesting in many ways. People see that as a green light for Jack Conway, because they had both said they weren't going to run against each other, and that neither one would accept the bottom of a ticket. So they were both looking at the gubernatorial seat and didn't want to run against each other, but neither would take the LT spot. And so that's very interesting, and that definitely green lights Conway to get things rolling. It'll be interesting to see how soon those campaigns kick off. Obviously, on the Republican side, the Heiner-Crosby ticket has already taken off, and everyone pretty much assumes that Comer is running. He's not officially said that, probably mainly for campaign finance purposes, but he has not officially declared. And as far as I know, no LT candidate has surfaced in a potential Comer ticket. So very interesting to kind of watch all this come together. And as we get close to the actual primary, I think things are going to get a lot more heated. It's going to be a lot more interesting. If nothing else, one of the advantages of not being a Republican or Democrat is that I'm not being bombarded with robocalls. Yay! No robocalls for me. But definitely hearing that lots of people getting robocalls out there, especially from the McConnell camp. Whatever. Like I said, I haven't heard any, so I don't know. Let me know if they're any good. I don't know. I don't get those. But speaking about government in general, a study came out here about a week ago from Princeton University. And actually, it's Princeton and Northwestern universities. Both did a combined study that says that the United States government now mostly more closely resembles an oligarchy or a corporatocracy than either a republic or a democracy. And, you know, honestly, I think they're right. I think that they pretty much nailed it right on the head. What we have now is a two-party system in general. And, by the way, that's shaking loose. We'll get to that in a minute. But two parties definitely have the political power right now. And each of those parties are owned by certain controlling corporate interests. And those corporate interests pay for people to get elected and to protect their corporate interests. And whether those corporate interests are, well, it's always to the corporation's benefit, but when you build protections into law that protect certain corporate interests, it's at the detriment of someone else. And so whether it's individuals or small business people or what, I can't tell you for sure who is the negative or the person losing out in any particular scenario, although, or any scenario, there's somebody that loses out. But the point is that what we have now is definitely, based on the ballot access laws and everything else, very much an oligarchy. And based on who gets elected and who's putting money into campaigns, it is very much a corporatocracy. And as much as people whine about it, you know, both the Occupy Wall Street and the Tea Party folks are really fighting against that oligarchy, that corporatocracy. And if they would, you know, stop arguing with each other long enough to realize that they had a common enemy, they could actually be quite powerful. But, you know, the powers that be keep them arguing amongst themselves, and so they get nothing done. Speaking of getting nothing done, got the report from the 2014 General Assembly session. And what we've got here, let's see here. Let's list the losers here. The losers, this is from a story from the from PBS, from NPR, rather. And the losers were listed as women, students, large telephone companies, fairness, ethics reform, felons, local option sales tax, opiate addicts, casino gaming, public-private partnerships, rep arena, teachers' pensions, and toll payees. But other than that, everybody won. There were, a handful of bills out there that actually were good that got killed or didn't make it through, which is unfortunate. Now, many of these bills, you can argue whether they were good or bad, but, you know, considering up here in Northern Kentucky especially, the problems we're having with heroin and opiate abuse in general that were exacerbated, made worse by the General Assembly a couple of years ago. Actually, I think it was just last year when they cut off the so-called pill mills and made them worse. I think that, it would have been nice to get a little bit of help from Frankfurt since they helped create the problem. When I say that, when they cut off the pill mills, and it was interesting, just this past week, I went down and spoke to some social workers in Marshall University, you know, right there at the border of Kentucky and West Virginia, right across the line in West Virginia. And, you know, something that they're very concerned about, and obviously we are too here in Kentucky, is that the government is not taking the right approach to solving drug addiction problems. You know, people with addictions have something wrong. Or as I always like to say, no five-year-old says, I want to be a junkie when I grow up. And the problem is that the government doesn't know how to handle these situations. The government, especially from, you know, even a state legislature perspective, is too far removed from the problem to be able to solve it. You're only going to solve opioid addiction one of a few ways. Number one, you have to attack the root cause. Why did this person get addicted to begin with? Now, what I'm hearing more and more of, and having just been in West Virginia, I heard that the numbers over there are similar, that a lot of the people that are on heroin now started out with a legitimate prescription for an opiate-based painkiller. And whether that abuse was on purpose or accidental, they, you know, ended up with a habit. And then when the state legislatures crack down and they're cut off, they don't. They still have their addiction. It's like, oh, well, you closed the pill mills. Nobody's addicted anymore. No, that didn't solve anything. And so the problem is that all they did was force all those people who have, they have a legitimate addiction to opioids. You took those people and forced them off of a known dosage pill and forced them to the street where anything goes. We keep seeing the stories up here anyway about the heroin cut with fentanyl, which, if I remember right, fentanyl is the stuff that Michael Jackson died from, but I can't remember. It was something like that. They keep making it worse. The best thing Frankfurt could do, the best thing they could do is give money back to Northern Kentucky that they'd taken away to begin with. Ah, it's not what he died from. Okay. Thanks, co-host Dave. Co-host Dave, look that up for me. It wasn't what he died from. Anyway, the point is fentanyl's bad stuff. But the best thing they could do is give us the money that we're sending to Frankfurt back to be able to actually set up some true rehab, to actually set up some, you know, tools, or give us the ability to create tools to combat this. And I really think this is an all of the above situation where, you know, you need to go into high schools and you need to tell high schoolers that this stuff's not a joke. It's not funny. It's not weed. It's not alcohol. This stuff is serious. It's a kind of a big deal. You need to go into doctors' offices and medical facilities and start to explain to them that they really need to take responsibility. And when they give a prescription for an opioid, they need to explain to the patient, hey, this isn't a joke. This is dangerous stuff. This is not an aspirin. This is not a Tylenol. This is dangerous stuff. And if you see this or this or this, then you need to go get help right away because you're developing an addiction. There's always signs of addiction. So inform the patient. Inform the patient's family members. Let them know what might happen and let them know, hey, if you start to see this, you need to stop. You need to contact us immediately. We'll help you out. But you need to stop before things get bad. You need to go into the business community and you need to work with them to help do education to their employees even. You know, people who get hurt on the job. You know, what harm would there be in sending an email or giving a piece of paper to your employees that says, hey, by the way, if you're on one of these painkillers, here's the bad things, you know, that could happen or whatever. Not that that's really going to solve the problem, really, but it's more of an education push to people who are already out of school. And that's the point, is that we're attacking the schools and going there. Now let's go to the employers and get some information out there. We go to the healthcare providers. We go there. We get all these things pushing the information out there. That's phase one, is for future prevention, right? That's information. Phase two is rehabilitation. And the rehabilitation piece, I'm hearing that it's anywhere from 6 months to 2 year wait to get into a rehab program at this point. And if that's really the case, then these people are done. Because if you actually have, and I've seen people with addictions, when these people hit rock bottom, when they finally realize, holy cow, what have I done to my life? They're usually on the brink of death. and they need help, and they're physically addicted, and there's nothing else they can do. Well, if it's a six-month to two-year wait to get in, they're done. They're done. People getting arrested on purpose just to get into the court-mandated rehab, because that takes precedence over privately sought help. And that's crazy, too. Talk about perverse incentives. Now I need to go get arrested so I can get rehab? Wait, what? But that's the system we've got right now. And so the heroin thing is a really big deal. They're talking about putting a special session in for it because they dorked around with it and dorked around with it and dorked around with it. It's not like they didn't have time. They had 4 months to dork around with this thing, and really it was before that. I mean, it's not like this was any big surprise. It's not like Jan 1 came around and was like, oh, my gosh, it's January 1st. Holy crap, look at this heroin problem. It's been building for years. That's why they did the pill mill bill last year, which, again, only made things worse. But they knew this was coming, and so there were a handful of bills. One was to be able to give a shot. I'll forget the name of it. It's like begins with an O, and I'm not going to remember the name of it. But it's something that first responders could give to people that are suffering an opioid overdose that specifically blocks opioids from being accepted by the body and can save people's lives. Unfortunately, that's a drug that requires a prescription to give out. So it takes an act of legislation to say, you know what? No, first responders are allowed to give this to people, right? That's probably a good idea to go ahead and give them that ability. The point is that, I don't know, Frankfurt is never going to get it all right, and they never do. But it's pretty funny reading the story about who are the winners, the coal industry, children with epilepsy. That was good. That was good. Eastern Kentucky. Good for them, because I'm sure their unemployment will go right down to 24.9 instead of 25 now or something. The bourbon industry, the tobacco industry, and they claim that it was good news for Obamacare or Bashir Care that has been dubbed here. Let's see here. Anyway, that's interesting. But anyhow, the point, I guess, is that there were a lot of things kicked around in the State House this year. Not many of them got done. And a lot of the big issues weren't tackled. You know, we're still, gosh, how long has it been now? 5 years? 6 years that we've been talking about casino-style gambling in the state? Still no traction. We're still right where we began. We're still talking about giving monopolies to horse tracks or no gambling at all. I mean, really, we haven't seen that the compromise is really easy to make it like our alcohol laws and just let people vote on it in the county and be done. We haven't figured this out yet. 6 years now. And, yeah, I know the people that are pushing these things, the people who are funding the pushes, neither of them like that answer, but that's the common sense one. That's the middle ground. Anyway, one of the things that was pushed, and actually I don't know if it got passed or not. I'm guessing it did not because I didn't hear anything from my gun owner friends. Was expanded carry. And I actually am of mixed feelings on this bill. From a pure liberty standpoint, I'm with you. You know, expanded carry is good. But when you start talking about carrying firearms into bars, I get a little nervous. You know, guns and alcohol just don't mix. It's really a bad idea. But anyway, it'll be interesting to see what happens because Georgia did pass one of those laws. And so in Georgia, they just made it this year, takes effect July 1st. You can now carry in bars, churches, schools, if the school board says it's okay, airports in the terminal, obviously not past the checkpoint, government buildings, which we already have that here in Kentucky. They also specifically put in prohibitions against creating a database of gun owners or taking fingerprints of gun owners. And I actually applaud that. That's a good thing. We don't need databases, and we don't want fingerprinting anyway. That's a massive invasion of privacy that can be used for lots of really bad things. I guess the point is that We'll see what happens in Georgia now with the allowing. I agree with everything else they've got here. I really worry about carrying a firearm in a bar. I mean, I've seen a lot of drunk people do a lot of really stupid things. That's all. That's just asking for trouble, I think. But anyway, this story. I was actually going to open with this one, and it got lost in the stack here. I apologize. Everybody here, I assume, is familiar with The Onion, and that it's, you know, one of the oldest original, you know, popular anyway, fake news sites. But the way The Onion does their fake news is they don't – some of the newer ones that are out there are more like trolling sites. They troll people to get them to go, oh, my gosh, and react to it, whereas The Onion's just there for comedy and hilarity. And, you know, sometimes they make a statement about us, and sometimes they just are silly. This story is FBI uncovers Al-Qaeda plot to just sit back and enjoy the collapse of the United States. And, you know, it's a really entertaining story. But it basically talks to, you know, it's one of those satire pieces that talks to all the issues we're having in the country and how we're not solving those problems. And that instead of solving the problems, they just continue to get worse and worse and worse. And so the joke of it is that Al-Qaeda, who is, you know, seeking to do us harm, is just going to sit back and relax and watch us destroy ourselves because it's a whole lot less work. You know, whatever. That was, like I said, I kind of got lost in the stack there. Oh, boy, yeah, there was a story here in Colorado. I assume, you know, everybody knows about Colorado having passed the full-blown legalization of marijuana. And it was inevitable. Something would happen. And it's, you know, what, 4 months later now. Some fourth graders got busted for selling marijuana. And so everybody's making a big deal out of this, right? And, you know, the thing is, who's to say those fourth graders wouldn't have been busted selling marijuana anyway? I mean, granted, you could say that it's more prevalent, it's more available, so maybe it's easier for them to do it. But if it's not pot things, and kids will do dumb things. It's still incumbent upon parents to raise their children and, you know, not just go, oh, well, it's up to the government to protect my children from everything. No, no. It's still up to parents to do that. Saw an interesting poll, shifting gears here again, interesting poll that 78% of Americans favor requiring a proof of citizenship before being allowed to vote. Now, this is something I've been in favor of as well, and I think it's common sense. If you don't have any idea of who you are, you probably should have that. You know, and the Republicans have been running on this for a while, and the candidates that have run on it have all lost. Now, the Democrats, I believe, have misinterpreted that to be that, oh, well, that issue's not popular. It must be the counter that's popular. When in reality, I think the problem is that wasn't the most important issue, and the public didn't feel like the Republican was focusing on the right thing, or maybe there was some other disagreement with other positions, like socially conservative positions are becoming less popular, whatever. 78% of likely U.S. voters believe that everyone should be required to prove their own citizenship before being allowed to register to vote. It's a very interesting thing. Let's see here. 29% believe laws that require proof of citizenship discriminate against voters. But even some of them agree. That's really strange. Anyway, I love the math of these things. So 78% of people believe you should have to show citizenship, but 29% believe that it's discriminatory. And apparently 8% of people just don't care that it's discriminatory. They just favor it anyway. 61% say that it does not discriminate. 10%, you know, that typical 7 to 10% don't know what's going on. They didn't hear the question. I don't know. I think it's common sense. You know, Not that I'm a big proponent of having to have all kinds of ID or some cumbersome process, but, you know, the process of voting is important. It's really the only peaceful means we have of telling our government we don't like what they're doing. And that's why we have elections. We have elections so that things can change without gunfire being exchanged. We have elections so that government will serve the people. That's the purpose of having those elections. If you have elections that are filled with fraud, then you're distorting that voice, and you may be disenfranchising people, taking away their voice. And that can never end up good, taking away people's voice. If you take away the only peaceful means to say, government, we don't like what you're doing, all that's left is non-peaceful means. And that's not what anybody wants. At least I don't. I've talked to a few people that do, but they're nuts. That's not good. We should always use the peaceful means to achieve goals. There should never be violence involved, especially not initiated. What time is it? We're getting down to the bottom of the hour here. Let me read one more story, just because this was good press for the Libertarian Party this week. In Boone County, up in Northern Kentucky, there was a forum held. The Northern Kentucky Chamber of Commerce has a PAC now, and that PAC has been holding debates. And the debates are they just did the judge executive candidates. I think they also did the commission candidates, but I'm not sure. I don't know who got invited to what. But ahead of the primary, they invited everybody. Originally, it was just Democrats and Republicans, and then they realized there were Libertarians and even an independent running. And so they invited the Libertarians to participate as well. And I must say they did a very good job. And, in fact, the media coming off of the event was tremendous for Libertarian Party candidates. They're putting forth real solutions, workable solutions at the local level, and did a really, really good job. If you're interested, you can Google the story. It's Libertarians Could Be X Factor in Boone Elections. So I just wanted to get a shout in for our folks since we get so little media. Anyway, I figured we'd go ahead and get that knocked down. All right. Well, with it being the bottom of the hour, let's take the break now. When we come back, we'll take your calls. If you'd like to call in, 858-683-1326. And we'll be on with co-host Dave to get his thoughts. You are listening to Liberty Unbridled on the My View Matters Radio Network. Back here in just a few minutes.
First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Oh, Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springsteen of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email MyViewMatters at AOL.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
All right, folks, and we're back. You are listening to Liberty Unbridled on the My View Matters radio network. Just real quick, a couple of folks have asked about what happened to the music and why the change. Long story made short, I don't really quite understand all the copyright laws and whatever. I don't know why most talk shows can use clips or whatever, but apparently we can't. And so I went ahead and reached out to a friend of mine who has a band whose music I enjoy and asked him if we could use a couple of his songs to use on the show. And so, if, by the way, if you're interested in that band, the band's name is State of Being, and you can go there to stateofbeing.com. Not really a plug for them, but I do thank them a whole lot for my buddy Chris for letting me use his band's music because it was a lifesaver. Otherwise, we'd have no music at all, and that would be really boring. So anyway, all right, I see co-host Dave has joined us here. Dave, welcome, and you know, we were talking in the break about the guns and the bars issue, so I think that's probably as good a place to start as any. Why don't you go ahead?
All right. Long story short, I don't really know exactly how I feel about it. I believe that you should be able to carry. I am one of those people, and I'm coming more and more to understand how unique I am in that I don't drink, but I don't stay away from bars. I'm not an alcoholic. I do have a drink every now and then, but most of the time if I go into a bar, I'm not in the bar to drink. I'm in the bar to socialize, and in some cases I'm in the bar to be the designated driver for, you know, my friends that I'm with. And so, you know, the first thing that hits my mind is, yeah, alcohol and guns don't mix, and there are already laws on the books that, you know, say if you, even if you have a concealed carry, if you're partaking of alcohol, you cannot carry your firearm while you're doing that. So I kind of don't know how I feel, because you walk into a bar and you're somebody like me, why shouldn't you be able to carry, especially when, you know, you're at risk, you know, around all these people that are partaking of alcohol and you're not, you know, you should be able to defend yourself. But, you know, I could see a big potential for abuse, you know, that happens there and everything. So, you know, jury's out.
Yeah, I'm a big Second Amendment advocate anyway, right? I mean, I'm all about people being able to defend themselves. I just know I've been in enough bars, I've seen enough crazy stuff at bars, you know, to know that there are some people who, you know, may walk into the bar legally, ostensibly to not partake. They may end up getting their friends to get them drinks, or maybe their friends will buy them a drink or whatever. I don't know. I just really worry about that scenario in particular. You know, I don't worry about the person with a CCDW license carrying in a school, right? Because they're in an environment where they're not going to use it. There's no there's no impairment of judgment at a school. There's no impairment of judgment at a library. There's no impairment of judgment in these places, but just the bar is the one that worries me. That's the only one. Everything else, you know, awesome, great. And with the Georgia law, I agree with everything they did. The only one that makes me worry is at a bar.
I would agree with that. But I think I'm leaning towards, you know, being in favor of the expanded carry for the reasons that you mentioned. You know, you and I have talked about it before. I am sick and tired about hearing about shootings in gun-free zones.
Yeah.
And so anything that gets rid of the places where these shootings are happening illegally with illegal guns, not by, you know, good citizens with their CCDW, you know, anything to eliminate those target areas, which is what they are, you know, I am in favor of. And I don't think that the expanded carry, now that I'm really giving it more serious thought, I don't think that the expanded carry would really affect in any way what happens at bars right now. If you walk into a bar and you believe that because there is a law against it, that you're walking in there and the only people that, you know, are carrying are the proprietors, you're just naive.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the guns are there now. And so I don't think that a law opening up, you know, to get rid of the gun-free zones, you know, and that affecting bars, I honestly don't think it's going to affect much. But I do think
the article that you mentioned and where was it that the expanded carry was just passed?
In Georgia. I do think that every American, period, should take a look and watch that situation. But especially those that are interested in the issue, you know, keep a real close eye on what's happening in Georgia. I don't think we're going to wind up seeing any higher prevalence of violence happening in bars.
No, the only thing I could see maybe from a political standpoint that might actually happen is that when there's an incident in a bar that probably or could have already happened anyway, right, you know, you might end up losing momentum or turning the tide the other direction of, you know, people going, see, this is why we need more gun control. I don't know. I worry about the
ramifications
of a bill like this.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. You know, I still have yet to rationally understand, you know, the people that are for increased gun control. It just doesn't compute to me, and I completely agree. You know, it would definitely be just, you know, one more thing that they would be using to advocate their cause, whatever it happens to be. Actually, let me give something of a little personal public service announcement from Dave Capano. If you don't like guns, that's cool. That's great. I totally support your right to not like guns. Stay away from them. Don't have one. Keep your kids away from them. Whatever you want to do. You know, that's great. But please, please make friends with somebody that does. Because if you are ever in a really nasty situation and you need that kind of protection and you do not have it and you can't provide it for your family, at least be friendly enough with somebody that they're going to be able to help you.
Yeah. No, that's a very valid point. You know, I always feel safer amongst my libertarian brethren because I know somebody's carrying. So you know, it's one of those things. I understand the reasoning. I get it. You know, some people wish there was a world where we didn't need to protect ourselves. They wish for a world without violence of one person against another. But, you know, it's the same argument I have with radical, you know, on the other side. We don't live in a perfect world. And we're, as far as I can tell, we're getting better. We always get better. Technology makes things better. We get a better understanding of the world around us generation over generation. But we're still a long way off from perfection. And, you know, so long as there is legitimate threats out there, no matter how rare they may be, you know, the reality is that the person primarily responsible for your own personal safety is you. You can call the police. They'll be there in 5 to 10 minutes, but that may be 4 to 9 minutes too late. You know, that's really the point of it. You know, I am very much an advocate for Second Amendment rights and specifically just in general, the principle of having the right to defend yourself. I just worry about mixing alcohol into that mix. I've seen some people do some real stupid things when they're drunk. That's all.
And I totally agree with you on that. I think we're completely agreeing, really,
right?
You know, on this. But the thing about the expanded carry that I do want to see is everything else. You know, I mean, I really do want to see that. The less gun-free zones we have, the less targets we have, and the places where they are right now just drives me nuts. It drives me bonkers. It drives me absolutely bonkers that you know, the places where we're saying, oh, you know, this is a gun-free zone, so nothing can happen here. Really, so you're trying to protect my kids by making a gun-free zone
right. Where
all of the law-abiding citizens will not carry their guns.
Yeah, you know, you have the compounding factor there, too, that, you know, these people that commit these atrocities obviously have a screw loose. And oftentimes want to do something that's just radical and shocking. And what's more shocking than hurting children, right? I mean, that's the warped mentality of these people. And, you know, we can talk all day about should there be better mental health facilities, should there be ways to try to help these people before they get so down the path of crazy town that, you know, they end up shooting up a school. But the reality is that I don't think there's any level of prevention that will ever make it so that our kids are 100% safe anywhere. And that's a terrible thing to think about as a parent.
That's just the truth.
You can't keep – it is the truth. It's hard to accept. And so I get why they want those gun-free zones, but I also recognize that we're not going to be able to get to a point in society – where it is not necessary to defend oneself. I don't see it in my lifetime.
I don't see it ever. And, to some extent, that argument, and, I mean, I'm on that side, you know, that personal defense side. You know, you have the right to defend yourself. That's where I am. But on some level, that argument in and of itself, even – is kind of inconsequential because, you know, the need to, you know, is what I mean. Because who is it that determines what somebody needs to defend themselves? It's
right.
The individual, period. The individual decides what they need to defend themselves. And so the need thing is, it's so subjective. And then you start using that word need, and, you know, it seems objective, but it's not. You know, one person may feel perfectly comfortable defending themselves, you know, with their hands. And they may be so far off into crazy land in a different way that they think that they're going to be able to, you know, defend themselves against a gun. Should somebody ever pull a gun on them, they're going to be able to defend against that gun with their hands and feet. Okay, you know what? That's fine. I think you have the right to be that crazy and think that you can defend yourself against a gun with your hands and feet. Got more power to you. Rock on.
Got some fast hands and feet.
Yes. Indiana Jones has something to say about that.
Yeah, 800 feet per second. Yes.
You know, it just doesn't matter. You know, every person has the right to defend themselves in whatever way they see fit. And if somebody thinks that they need, you know, a gun, then they think they need a gun. If they think they need something else, then they think they need something else.
Yeah.
You know, whatever. You know, it's not so much about the need to, because even if we do get to a point where, let's say, violent crime, and this is crazy utopia speak, but follow me for a second. mm-hmm. we get to a point where crime gets down to under, you know, violent crime gets down to under 1% in the entire United States, everywhere. It gets down to well under 1%. Where's it going to happen? Is it going to happen to you? You still don't know. No matter how minuscule the chance is, you know, even if it's 0.00001% likelihood that you would ever be in a position where you needed a gun to protect yourself against somebody trying to kill you, there's still that chance. And, you know, you mentioned something earlier. You said you don't think it's going to happen in your lifetime. Never. Never, period, ever, in all of eternity will, you know, human beings be at a point where, you know, there is a 0% likelihood of the probability of somebody going nuts. 0%.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen.
Hey, I want to switch gears here because we've only got about 10 minutes left, and something – you and I had talked about this kind of before the show, and actually I didn't mention the survey, but there was a survey that came out this week that showed that 53% of Americans do not identify with the Republican or Democratic parties. You know, and I've attributed some of that to why the Libertarian Party is doing so much better now, is that we have a lot more, well, the majority of Americans don't believe that the Democrats or Republicans stand for what they believe in. And, you know, we talked a bit before the show, we've talked, you know, during the show about, you know, the parties. And, you know, something that I think is interesting is that as America is moving away from walking lockstep with the Democrats and Republicans, you know, they're starting to really, the Democratic and Republican parties are starting to try to put these loyalty oaths in and crack down on loyalty oaths and try to keep control over who is even allowed to run as a Democrat or Republican. And I think it's interesting. I think it's also self-destructive. I think that, you know, these parties are basically running against the tide at this point. And rather than trying to embrace the changes that are happening in society and embrace what people want, they're continuing to try to shove their agenda down people's throats and say, well, it's better than the other guy's agenda. And that's like the main rallying cry is we suck less. I just kind of wanted to get your thoughts on that. I know, you know, like I said, we talked about it before the show, and I know you had some interesting thoughts on it.
Well, yeah, I mean, the first thing, the first thought that comes to mind, you know, when I hear about a political party trying to crack down, you know, on their own people and, you know, saying this is, you know, this is what we're about and this is what we're going to be about. And if you disagree, we're actually going to make your lives a little bit painful. We're not going to let you play. My first thought, you know, about that is, well, good for them. I mean, honestly, good for them. I think that that's a good thing for individuals. Do I think that it's a bad thing for the parties? I don't know. And, you know, since I don't play ball on that court, and I never have, I don't really care. but I think it's a good thing for individuals because it's helping progress that whole thought process that's happening across the nation right now. It's happening in individuals' minds. You know, they're being more frequently put into positions where they have to ask themselves, since I do not agree with my party, what does that make me? And I think that's a good thing. I think that's a very good thought experiment for each individual to go through. And, you know, you really do have to seriously consider that. When you find yourself in a political party and you find yourself disagreeing with the establishment of that political party, is that where you belong?
Right.
What is that saying about you?
Yeah, I mean, that's actually, you know, how I kind of came about to the Libertarian Party is, you know, I originally registered as a Republican because my parents were Republican, and, you know, through, and it actually took me a good solid 2 years and some, you know, seeking advice from friends and whatnot that kind of led me the path that I was on. But I agree, the self-introspection is a good thing for people to question, do I belong in this party? You know, do I belong here? Is this group really working towards where I want to go or not? I think that's good for everybody. I mean, that's just good life advice in general. You know, am I leading the life that I want to lead? Am I going the direction I want to go? I think that that's a healthy exercise for people to do from time to time. I guess what's interesting to me, though, is the digging into the heels. That's the part that interests me, is that it's just amazing to me that, you know, in a political process where people are supposed to, the parties and the candidates of those parties are supposed to be representative of the people and what the people want. Instead, what we're getting is a digging into the heels and saying, no, this is the way it's going to be. And I just see it as bad politics. That's all. It just kind of amazes me. You know, we talked about the study. I guess
no, I do
maybe
too.
That's where it ties in. Go ahead.
I do too. I see it as bad politics. I see it as bad politics. But in the long term, it's a good thing. It just makes it more clear. The more, I guess this is the thing, political correctness is one of the things that has just crippled us, you know, in our conversations as a society. And, I mean, I'm talking all throughout the United States. It doesn't matter where you are. Political correctness has touched your life, and it has conversations that you otherwise would have had. You know, I mean, I get to thinking about the Bundy situation, you know, that's happening right now. You know, and you start hearing people on the extreme left and on the extreme right starting to say the exact same thing, and it basically breaks down to, this isn't politically correct. You know,
right.
It's like, wait a minute. When did political correctness enter this conversation? It didn't have anything to do with it.
And what a crazy, crazy situation that whole thing has been. If you don't touch on that next week while I'm gone, we'll definitely touch on it 2 weeks. Because, man, what a crazy, convoluted story that's been. I mean, you can
right.
take an entire show on that mess. I don't know. I just,
where I'm going with that
yeah.
is that political correctness thing has just crippled the conversation. So when you're being forced to shut up about something that you think by people that are supposed to be helping you, it makes you think twice, and that's a good thing. The more fundamentalist everyone gets in their religion, in their politics, and everything else, the more fundamentalist they get, the better off we all are, because it becomes more and more clear exactly what it is that, you know, that group, you know, of people really stands for. And I think that's a good thing. You know, you want to be fundamentalist about something? Great, be fundamentalist. I get along with fundamentalists really, really well. There are lots of Republicans that I get along with really well, lots of Democrats that I get along with really, really well. But, you know, I don't get along with a Democrat that is not a Democrat. I don't get along with them at all. They're saying that they're something, and, you know, meanwhile, they're saying that they think the exact opposite of what their establishment is saying that they're supposed to believe in. It's like, well, what are you then? You're saying you're a Democrat, but how can you be a Democrat when you don't believe in the things that are Democrat to believe? Well, it doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, well, and I think part of it, too, is that the parties, the R's and the D's, or D's and R's, they oftentimes say one thing and do another. And so that creates that kind of confusion as well. You
that's
know, the
true,
Democrats
voted
for Obama, Yeah, but the Democrats that voted for Obama thought they were really voting for some guy that was for the little guy and wasn't going to be a big corporate guy. But we've seen that, you know, half that money, you know, or the stimulus money all went to people that were big Obama donors. And we've seen lots of examples where it's still the good old boy system. It's just a different system. We're almost out of time. You got final thoughts, Dave?
That was my point. The more clear it becomes, you know, exactly what all of these groups are all about, the better off everybody is, including the people that are inside going, hey, wait a minute, I didn't think this is what we were about. They got to figure out, you know, who they actually are.
Well, I appreciate it, Dave, as always. Thank you. And, Dave, you'll be running the show solo next week, so good luck to you on that. Folks, thanks for tuning in. As mentioned, Dave's going to be here running the show by himself next week. I will be unavailable, but tune in, and we thank you for tuning in every week to Liberty Unbridled. And listen to the other shows on the network, too. We're here Sunday through Thursday night at 7 p.m. You got Ed Springson and Dale the Truth the rest of the week. Until next time, folks, take care. Dave, have a good week, and have a good show without me. And, folks, we'll see you. I'll see you all in a couple of weeks. Thanks.
Bye, everybody.